Cultivate Simple, episode 18, The Family Cow. Meow.
I'd rather be a farmer. I'd rather work the land. I'd rather see the mountainsides. I'd rather see your hand. I'd rather swim the ocean. I'd rather not pretend.
You had an iPhone,
you
wouldn't have any problems.
I'd rather do something.
You wouldn't have any problems with
that's
it.
That's what commercials say.
My mic is working. Good. Are we on? Are we live?
I think so.
Okay.
Are we?
Yes. Welcome to Cultivate Simple. I recorded that whole first part, and I'm going to leave that in. An honest and unrehearsed discussion about trying to live a more simple life. And the reason that we just had some technical difficulties.
Yes.
We recorded part of the...
Take two.
We recorded part of the intro, and then everything shut down. We're trying to use four microphones today, and there's a reason for that, because we're on special location. This is episode 18. The topic today is the family cow. And the reason, and so we have to remember everything we said, and we have to say it exactly the same way. Now, what exactly did we say? The reason that we are on location today, we're back in Ohio because we're doing some traveling, which we'll, I'm sure, be talking about in the next couple weeks. But we decided that since we were back in Ohio, and we've been getting a lot of questions about various topics, because as we mention different things and as we talk about things on the podcast, it seems like we get a lot of questions about the things we talk about. And usually we mention them in passing as just things that we do. But a couple years ago, we started getting raw milk. And we've mentioned that on the podcast, and a lot of people said, hey, what's that all about? Can you tell us more about that? What if we get our own cow for our family? And wanting to know more information about that. And so we decided to ask the experts because, and Susie, I'll have you again in take two here, tell how we even came to start using raw milk or the reasoning. Or maybe we should save that question for when we start talking to Don. I don't know. Yeah. What do you think?
I don't know.
We'll see. We completely lost our groove with take two. But go ahead. Why don't you tell everybody how we came to start buying raw milk from Mike and Don.
All right. Well, I've mentioned this before in our local food podcast. Mm-hmm. I found Mike and Don in Robert's Farm on Local Harvest back, I don't even know, it was probably 5 or 6 years ago. Mm-hmm. It's been a long time.
It has.
I was looking for pastured eggs locally, and I mentioned on that podcast that if you want to start eating locally, eggs is like the baseline. That's where you should start because they're fairly easy to find locally. Even in the cities, you can find people that raise them in their backyards and sell them. So I started getting eggs, and then I think it was probably 6 months or so after I started doing that, they got some cows and started selling their milk, and then pretty soon they were doing raw milk and passing out brochures. And so, yeah, eventually we, in Ohio, it's illegal to buy and sell raw milk, so we essentially purchased a cow or part of a cow and paid our friendly local farmers to watch it for us. But yeah, so that's kind of how we met Mike and Don and the boys, and yeah.
And unfortunately, Mike couldn't be with us today, yeah. But we do have the better half. Don't tell him I said that. So, Suze, or Don, why don't you introduce yourself and your two farm hands over here, mm-hmm. and tell us just how you guys kind of got into this. How did you start out? Is that a good question, Suze? How would you ask that?
What made you decide to buy, I don't know, how many cows did you get, like a dozen?
We actually bought a herd of 20.
20,
yes.
Okay.
And we bought a herd of 20 certified organic dairy cows. Mm-hmm. So, the farm was certified organic at the same time, right at that same time. So that was in 2006.
Okay. Yeah. Wow.
Yeah. And then, I guess I need to put a disclaimer in there that says, don't do what we did. It was very expensive, and we just hadn't, our motivations were wrong at the beginning. It was more money focused than mm-hmm. product focused. So we've learned a lot from our mistakes, mm-hmm. and we're still grateful because it's brought us to where we are today. But we're the seventh generation to live on this farm. It's a Mike's mom's farm. In fact, she was actually born in the farmhouse next door. Mm-hmm. And then she and her sister, they did not farm, so it skipped a generation. Mm-hmm. So now we're back in it. And Mike was an engineer by degree and did that for a while, but discovered that his love was really being outside. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he does enjoy the animals. I think more than anything, he just enjoys being outside.
I can relate to that.
Yeah.
I'm like that too.
Yeah. Doesn't like being confined. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So now here we are, still doing it. The dairy, we're no longer certified organic. We call ourselves voluntarily organic.
Kind of beyond organic is what Elliot Coleman and a lot of those groups now, but
yeah,
they all pioneered. And I think we've discussed this too. They all pioneered the organic movement, and that kind of gets mm-hmm. co-opted, of course, like mm-hmm. everything else by mainstream corporations. And then they water it down. So then you have to do something.
Well, and the paperwork was horrendous mm-hmm. and, you know, and there was a cost factor. And the bottom line was our customers who would come out to the farm every week, they would see what we were doing and, mm-hmm. you know, they knew what we were doing. And it was like, do we really need a piece of paper?
And to spend the extra money.
Right. And the time.
And that's mm-hmm. one of the reasons I encourage people to go to the farms that they're buying stuff. Because we talked about this, I think, 2 weeks ago when we talked about, like, my criteria for what I buy. Mm-hmm. And organic isn't always important to me because I prefer going out and mm-hmm. seeing what the farmers are doing, because sometimes it's in some instances that's mm-hmm. not much better than mm-hmm.
well and we also had some bad episodes where, you know, like we had to purchase hay because we didn't have enough hay mm-hmm. so that means we had to buy certified organic hay mm-hmm. which was a lot more expensive, and so, you know, we got a shipment of it and it came and it was full of multiflora rows. Mm-hmm. Well, just because it's certified organic doesn't mean it's going to be top of the line hay. Right. And if you're not, you know, if you don't drive to where they're at and actually look at the field yourself, you don't know that until mm-hmm. you get it. So a lot of lessons learned. Right. A lot of lessons learned. Yeah.
Right.
So now here we are still farming, and we're actually homeschooling our boys now. So mm-hmm. I was going to call them willing accomplices, but I guess they really don't have much of a choice. But they're good troopers. They're huge helps, especially the older they get. Michael will be 14 in, what, a week?
Oh.
Yeah. And Paul will be turning 13 this summer. So, you know, as I get older and weaker, they're getting, bigger
gracious.
And stronger. So it's quite an asset. But no, we're enjoying walking along together and, mm-hmm. and learning. And so I guess there's our intro.
Mm-hmm. So why did you said that Mike wanted to basically be outside and the farm was here. Mm-hmm. What sort of prompted that, or what was that decision that he finally said, let's do this or try to do this full time?
Yeah. Well, he did a lot of internet research and really because we didn't have the money to just go out and buy what we think is traditional farming, like, you know, the big equipment. We didn't have the money to go mm-hmm. and do that. He started kind of looking at other ways, and then he learned about rotational grazing, and he learned about grass-based mm-hmm. Grazing, and really was excited, read about Joel Salatin and kind of the direction that he took. And thought, wow, maybe I really could farm, because mm-hmm. he really didn't think that he could farm.
Right.
Just based on what he had grown up with knowing.
$50,000 Ram truck.
That's right. That's exactly right.
But the Super Bowl says we can afford $50,000 Ram trucks as farmers.
Farmers really are.
Yeah.
Yes.
We were discussing that before the show. So,
So that kind of, he got, I guess, encouraged from reading that mm-hmm. and thinking that, you know, maybe we could do this, and talk to his parents. We don't own the farm. They own the farm, and mm-hmm. they let us farm it. So we're very blessed mm-hmm. in that mm-hmm. we did not have to, like, go out and purchase a farm. Mm-hmm. And we live right next door to his parents. So So that's worked out really nice. I forget your question.
How did he make the decision? How did you make the decision to kind of make the jump?
Yeah, a lot of prayer. Yeah. Even though we were misdirected in our prayer. In fact, we were praying more like, Lord, we want to go this way. Will you come with us? Instead of,
right.
How do you want us to do it, Lord?
Right.
So it was basically just kind of decided, we're going to take
give
that plunge.
Yeah.
So we invested what we have, and it is what you see.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, but that meant also stopping a lot of things that we used to do, or mm-hmm. not having a lot of the same things that we used to have.
Mm-hmm.
So it was at a sacrifice. Wish we would have made those sacrifices first and started small and then
right.
grown into where we are now. And mm-hmm. that would be the advice that we would give people now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, start simplifying, cultivating a simple mm-hmm. life first, and then, you know, go from there. And then
choose to do it rather than being forced to do it.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Which always makes it better.
Yeah.
That's a choice rather than a
yeah.
when the choice
necessity.
Is made for you.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's definitely true.
Yeah.
And how many cows do you have right now?
Ooh, how many cows do we have right now? I'm going to guess and say 30-ish,
mm-hmm. okay.
something like that. Because we've got like sections. We have, you know, the grass-fed beef herd, they're in mm-hmm. one section. We've got our dairy herd who is, they're on their break right now because we are a seasonal dairy.
Mm-hmm.
So they're on their vacation. And we have, what do we have, like 13 there? 14. 14 in there. And then we have last year's calves, the ones that we kept, we still have them, and that's 7 of those.
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't know.
That's way too much math for me.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe it's only 25.
Okay.
I don't know.
Somewhere in there.
Yeah.
And I know was some of the equipment here before you guys started, or did you purchase all of the kind of dairy equipment?
The dairy equipment, we actually went to an auction and
okay.
bought like the pipeline and that mm-hmm. to outfit the barn next door. From an auction, from a dairy mm-hmm. that was retiring, basically.
Okay.
And wonderful price. I mean, we got a great deal on that. I mean, we had to take down all the pipeline and clean
mm-hmm.
it all and then bring it here.
Right.
And Mike was able to help the guys that we hired to help us install all that.
Mm-hmm.
But he was able to help and reduce the price on that.
Mm-hmm.
We built the milk house, and Mike was able to help with that. Mike's mom's dad did milk when she was growing up. But that still, there was some stuff we did have to take down, from that,
mm-hmm.
but I mean, it hadn't been used as a dairy for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
And they raised Jersey cows,
mm-hmm.
so they were small and they stayed in the barn
mm-hmm.
all the time, you know, in the winter. So there was like a trough in there to catch the manure and that, and we knew we weren't going to do that, so
mm-hmm.
we actually like filled in the trough mm-hmm. so that it'd be easier to clean the barn out when the cows go out
mm-hmm.
and that kind of a thing. And we ended up finding a used bulk tank from another farm that it was just kind of sitting in a corner. So we really fell into some good deals on
mm-hmm.
getting some used equipment, and it's been wonderful for us. It's really been great.
And what type or what variety of cows do you have?
Well, they're a Heinz 57. They're a mix. There's a lot of Normandy, a lot of Jersey. There's a little bit of Holstein, just kind of a mix. And that of that original herd, how many do we have left? We only have 2 left from that original herd. So, you know, as cows get older and they move on,
mm-hmm.
You know, for whatever reason, whether it be temperament or... because they do have to meet some criterion
mm-hmm.
to stay here.
Yeah.
Because I am afraid of animals, as crazy as that sounds. I have a fear of animals and think they're all trying to attack me. but if you ease me into it, I think I do okay. Right, guys?
Well, and your cows are...
big cows.
Not small.
Right. They are bigger cows. They are bigger cows.
I can understand that.
We mm-hmm. get milk from a dairy in Maine, and she's got 3 Jerseys, and they're small, they're like mm-hmm. old-fashioned jerseys, because even some jerseys have been bred bigger.
Yes.
You know, you see them at
yes.
the fair and they're ginormous, but hers
yes.
are pretty like you know, the hips of her cows are, you know, maybe up to my armpit. They're not even that big. Yeah, they're pretty like small.
4 foot.
Yeah.
Maybe.
And man, when I go out in the field and look at your cows,
like, there are some bigger ones.
Mammoth.
Yeah. And what's funny is we did actually have one or two little Jerseys that came with that original herd. Mm-hmm. But they were very persnickety and not very nice. In fact, one of them was named Dawn. She was one of the first ones to go, actually.
They're like those little yippy dogs.
Yeah. And, you know, and with the way that we milk, I mean, we just have a setup in our barn. Mm-hmm. So that means, you know, when Mike and the boys are putting the milkers on, they have to bend down and mm-hmm. all that. So actually for them, a bigger cow is better.
Right.
Mm-hmm. But that's just us, you know, if everybody's going to be different.
Right.
So, and as far as what we've bred into the herd, we've had Normandy bulls. We've had... I shouldn't say plural. We've had a Normandy bull, we've had a Jersey bull, and now we have a Shorthorn bull. Mm-hmm. And that's because we're trying to breed some more beefiness into the herd. Because basically, when our calves that are born, they're either saved, the girls are saved for future dairy if we, you know, we single out the ones that we like, or they'll just go into our beef herd, our grass fed beef herd. And same, the boys, that's their fate as well. Mm-hmm. Unless we have like a year, like a drought, like this past year, and we were afraid we would be able to have enough food for everyone. So we actually did sell some.
Mm-hmm.
But ideally, we'd like to try to keep everybody. So, because we're already sold out of our grass-fed beef for next year because we don't have very many.
Mm-hmm.
And so it'll be the same for the year after because we also won't have very many. So
it's hard to find that balance.
Yeah.
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 But kind of like when you said starting out, you keep it on the smaller side instead of, I mean, that's better than trying to blow it up big right away and then end up having to deal with the consequences of that.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah.
So we had a lot of questions, and we can kind of go this direction for a while. We had a lot of questions about families that are wanting to get a cow.
Right. And I think you sold some of your calves to a family, didn't you?
We did.
Was kind of wanting to do this. They wanted like a family cow sort of thing to get their own raw milk so that they don't have to get it from their local farmer.
Yeah. And they, they've actually had 1 or 2 years of calves now. Mm-hmm. 2 years of calves. Yeah. So it's been kind of fun because, you know, they're growing slowly. Mm-hmm. There's a big learning curve. There's a big learning curve. And they're trying to get their farm established. I mean, they're remodeling and doing things. So, you know, they're learning too. But yeah, so that's been fun to try to help people and answer those questions. And I remember when the first calf they were having, they were really nervous, you know.
Yeah.
Like, what do I do? Should I go out there and help, you know? And and really, honestly, I mean, if everything is going well, you don't want to have to help.
Right.
That's, you know, the best case scenario is you just walk up into the field and
there's
a calf. And it's my favorite time of the year is when we start calving, which is the middle of March till about the end of April. And it's so exciting to go up into the field and see who might have had their calf. You know, it's beautiful. So it was kind of fun to do that with a friend and watch them go through it too.
And I think that maybe one of the things when we were kind of talking about this before the show about chickens and, you know, animals in general, I wonder if maybe some of the reservations people have towards getting a cow is that we make it seem so difficult because we think it's like, and we talked about this in the raw pet food diet. I mean, we're led to believe that dogs have this super scientific like way they need to be fed and nourished in order to thrive and in order to be okay. And maybe that's the case if you're wanting to get, you know, 15 gallons of milk out of your cow. But if you're having a cow to put in your backyard, that's not what you're wanting. So, you know, feeding them on grass and, you know, if you're it's like permaculture. If you're developing that natural cycle, animals are a little less care than they would be if you're, I mean, you know, like a confined animal feedlot where you're providing all of their food and you're providing all of that and having to manage all that and all the diseases that come from that. If you're trying to do it in a more natural way, I mean, animals are animals and they kind of...
They've been doing this for a long time.
Yeah, and it's when humans step in that actually create all the a lot of the problems.
Well, because when humans step in, it's to maximize productivity, not to make the animals happy.
Minimize inputs and, you know, milk them for all they're worth, so to speak.
That's right.
So, yeah, I mean, it's interesting because that might be one of the things that, I mean, there's this weird thing about my sister. I was talking to my sister about that yesterday, and she was talking to, she knows they have friends that are conventional, like CAFO beef farmers. And so they were talking about how they were trying to find a pastured cow and they couldn't quite afford the cost of some of the pastured cows. And he was like, just get a bull and throw it in your garage and buy bags of feed for it and then shovel it out the garage every now and then. She said to him that was completely normal. And she was just like, that's weird. Shouldn't the cow? I mean, I want my cow to be out in the grass. I want them to be eating grass. Right. I want them to walk around. Right. I want them to feel the sun. And
I mean, we don't have a manure pit, you know, somewhere on the farm where it's all piled up. And then they do all that in the field for us. So they're, in essence, they're working for us.
Right.
I mean, we do have to clean the barn out, you know, when we're done milking. And sometimes, you know, you might have some piles that way, but you just put it right back outside and it's, I mean, there's no pile.
You know? And the irony is that it's less work in some respects and more, like, you don't have the environmental impacts that you have in a system where you're keeping all the cows in the barns and you have ginormous.
But you do have a lot of, like, this, and this would be Mike's part. I can't really say too much about this. The boys have helped him with moving the cows and moving the temporary fence. I mean, it's a lot of outside walking and moving things, you know. And, you know, if you have a good perimeter fence, it's not a big deal if they get out of the single wire so much. But see, we don't have everything with a big perimeter fence. So there are certain locations on the farm that if they get out, that would be really bad. So, you know, you have to, you have to be careful about where you move your cows. If you're not going to be home for the day, you know, do you really want them close to the road on that single wire? Or do you want to have them, you know, in more of a Fort Knox type, at least perimeter? But it is a lot of work to move all the fence. But, I mean, if you love being outside anyways, and, you know, the cow, it's, like, funny. It's funny watching Mike when he's out in the field because he's like the Pied Piper, you know. I mean, they're following him because they know they're going to get new grass, and they love it. I mean, their whole motivation for anything is to just to be able to eat. So when they see him coming, I mean, you know, he can lead them wherever. So it's actually beautiful to watch. It's cool. And my favorite thing is to look out and see the boys walking right next to him. You know, it's fun. It's heartwarming.
Happy cows.
Yeah.
That's why we got our milk here.
Exactly.
And that's why some people want to keep their own, you know, because they want to make sure they know where it's coming from.
Well, and that's like when we talked about small farm and getting things locally. I mean, that's one of the nice things about getting things locally is you can go out and see how the animals are being treated, you know.
Well, when we go out and pick up our milk, even now, I mean, her cows are grass fed and, you know, they have some hay in the winter, but they still go outside. So, you know, when we go out there and pick up our milk, they're always peeking around the barn at us, you know,
like, hey, what are you guys doing?
Or they're out in the field watching us drive by or, you know, I mean, it's great to see, there's so much more personal.
Well, and the, and we talked about this too on the small local farm, and maybe Dawn, you can comment on this a little bit, that when we're paying you to take care of our cow for us, you're getting all of that money. Where if you were selling the milk to a larger conglomerate that's then shipping it, packaging it, reselling it, you know, you're not getting near as much. So, you know, what are the kind of, what's the two sides to that?
Well, I mean, it definitely helps you to be on that road towards being sustainable for your family. I mean, I'm trying to remember when we first started and we were shipping milk, still we were doing a small amount of cow. I mean, less than 20 cows or 20 cows or less is small. So, you know, that wasn't sustaining for us either. So keeping it where we're not, you know, shipping it like that, and then getting to have the relationships with the customers when they come here and having that opportunity to talk to people and show them what we're doing and even planting seeds for people to do their own. I mean, for us, that's more of what it's about than doing it just for the money, I guess, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, definitely. So getting back then to somebody who wants to get, say, a cow or wants to do it on more of a small scale, what are some of the recommendations or advice? I mean, when you have people that come and not mm-hmm. necessarily even that want to start their own herd, but just maybe want to have one or two cows, mm-hmm. what are the benefits and mm-hmm. what are definitely the drawbacks? Because I know there's a lot of drawbacks to it.
Yeah. Which is why we don't have a cow.
Which is why we don't have a cow. Exactly. Yet.
Well, one of the big things would be to not go with one that's like been bred traditionally to pump out all that milk, like your Holstein mm-hmm. or your Jerseys now. Mm-hmm. Try to, you know, get a different, even if it's just a mutt. Mm-hmm. I mean, that seems to be better for what you're going to get, because those cows aren't used to being out on pasture.
Right. And certain mm-hmm. breeds do better absolutely. On pasture. Certain breeds will also do better mm-hmm. depending on the type of pasture you have, from what I've read. Now, mm-hmm. clearly I have no mm-hmm. real life experience with this, but I've mm-hmm. read a lot on it. And, you know, you probably should look at the pasture that you have, because some breeds will do better with a lesser quality pasture than others.
Yep.
And some breeds won't do well on pasture at all. So you definitely need to do your homework as far as that's concerned.
And I know that Mike has researched, and, you know, probably the most common thing that he has seen has been you need about an acre and a half mm-hmm. Per cow mm-hmm. for mm-hmm. grazing. Mm-hmm. He said, but that totally depends on your pasture, because, you know, if your pasture isn't, you know, as good, as lush as it could be, you're going to need more than that.
Right.
You know, or if you have a drought, or if you have too much rain, or, you know, all that changes.
And you definitely need to consider, like, the worst mm-hmm. possible scenario,
absolutely.
Like your drought, so that you're not stuck in the summer with, or in the, even in the fall.
So I know that he's very conservative, so, you know, he usually says 2 acres, you know, per cow.
Right.
That would be, you know, that would be good. But I know also, you know, we like the thought of someone starting with a calf.
Mm-hmm.
Buying a calf, because you can raise it as a pet,
mm-hmm.
you know, and you can have it halter broke, so it'll come with you wherever, mm-hmm. you know, and you can tether it to a tree, you can tether, you know, and
that's more like the Laurel Ingalls Wilder,
exactly.
where they would have a cow and just kind of move the stake around the yard, that kind of rotational grazing on a
extremely small
basis.
Scale.
Yeah.
And I know the boys, they each have, we'll call it a pet. Mm-hmm. calf from that was born this past year. I mean, and they come right up to them, you know, they can pet them, they can, if they need to put a halter on them, because we need to move them somewhere, that's way easier than, you know, trying to corral something and
some giant cow that maybe you because I think that mm-hmm. and that's the thing, if you don't have a lot of experience, and maybe if you want to get a household cow, you need to find a local small-scale farmer in the area that'll mm-hmm. help you find the right cow, or one mm-hmm. that maybe you can buy a calf from, because
mm-hmm.
I mean, I've heard a lot of stories of people saying, you know, they went to the livestock auction and bought what they thought was going to be a great a great animal, only to figure out that they got screwed and ended up with this cow that's unmanageable.
We always tell people, don't buy from the auction, because that's where we send ours that we're done with for whatever reason, temperament mm-hmm. or health issues, whatever.
And it's definitely better to invest in,
spend
a little bit more maybe to get something, so you don't end up, because sometimes you have to spend more to get something good, and then you'll mm-hmm. save money down the line and mm-hmm. hassle and time and headaches. Yeah. And
or even if it's like that, you know, a heifer, a first calf heifer, you know, mm-hmm. and you've maybe we've already broken her in, and, you know, mm-hmm. she's milking fine and she doesn't kick or whatever. And, mm-hmm. you know, even to start that way, at least it would be a younger cow that could still grow with you.
Mm-hmm.
And definitely one that's been around kind of the small scale.
Right.
Being around lots of people and not in a corral all the time without any personal contact would be good.
So what are some of the drawbacks? And you can talk about it on your scale, since that's obviously what you know. But,
mm-hmm.
you know, even for someone that has, because I think, you know, some of the drawbacks would be similar for a large scale or, you know, medium 20 cows, 30 cows mm-hmm. and having sort of the family cow.
Right.
What are the bad things?
Well, you know, I don't know that I'd call it bad. You just have to prepare for it. And that mm-hmm. would be your daily milking, mm-hmm. you know.
Mm-hmm.
Now for us, you know, we have 36 weeks approximately of where we milk every day. And we have about 16, is that right? 36 mm-hmm. and 16? Yeah.
Right.
About
16
weeks of dry mm-hmm. where we're not milking them.
Mm-hmm.
They're preparing to have their calf. We time it so that there's like a 6 to 8 week window where they're all having their calves mm-hmm. at about the same time. But, you know, when they are milking after they've had their calf, that it's a daily commitment. When we first started out, we did milk twice a day. And it was exhausting. But, mm-hmm. I mean, we were also, like, jumping right into it. Didn't have anything to do with milking before that.
And that's kind of, like, what everybody says you need to do, because we have there were a couple questions on that. Like, how, what is once a day milking? Like, how do you do that? Is that, you know, do you get as much milk when you do?
And you do. You do sacrifice some of your milk. You do. You lose, I think Mike said we lose about 30% of the milk. But see, for us, you know, we're 100% herd share, so... we don't have that push to get a certain volume from our herd. It's healthier for the animal because you're not pushing them.
There's a lot less stress because you don't have to move them as much either.
Because ours, since we rotationally graze them, sometimes they're pretty far away from where the barn is. So that's, you know, a second time you'd have to go get them and bring them down. When we first started, we also milked the whole year. We weren't seasonal when we first started. So bringing them down on icy, I mean, it's hilly here, you know, it's dangerous for the cows and it hurts their feet if there's, you know, if the ground is frozen and, you know, and not to mention us, you know. And slipping, you
know. And they're like humans, they get cranky when the conditions
are right. And I can't blame them for being the same way.
Because I know you've talked about how in the fall when the grass isn't lush, they're kind of, you know,
and they know it's winding down time, so they get cranky. So we're really happy to be done, like, that second week of December. So, you know, I don't know that that's a downside as far as the daily milking, but it is a commitment, and you need to do it. But once we went to once a day... it was a huge improvement for all of us, for our time, because, I mean, golly, trying to fit that second milking in and have a life is really hard. It's really hard.
Well, it seems like a 30% reduction in milk is great for a 50% reduction in the time you spend doing the milking.
That's the way that we looked at it, and it works for us. It doesn't work for everybody, but for us, it worked really well.
Well, I'm sure if you're trying to do a family cow, you're not going to be... especially if you're doing another job or one of you is working somewhere and you're getting this cow just to provide milk for your family, spending...
Well, but the thing is, if you have a family cow, you have no choice but to have a period where you have no milk. And see, that's what the one thing that Mike really likes about seasonal. He said it's more pertaining to the natural span of a cow's lactation cycle. You know, if you only have one... You have to breed it at some point, because otherwise, I mean, you're supposed to do it every year. You could go 2 years, you know, and keep milking them, but that's harder on their body. So you're going to have to get them rebred at some point.
They need
and
a rest.
They need just a rest. Like we do. That's exactly right. So it just seems more natural for us to go that route. With us doing homeschooling, it helps because we can do more of a focus on the bookwork part during these winter months, you know, so that because, you know, when spring comes, we all want to be outside. You know, so our labs turn to being outside and that kind of stuff more than the book work on the inside. So for our family, it works out much better. And plus, you know, our boys like to play baseball. It gives them an opportunity to, you know, to go and do that. And we can see it. We don't miss it. So for our lifestyle, it works.
And so how, so you used to do twice a day milking, like how do you transition? Or I suppose if it's a young heifer that you bred for the first time, do you just milk once a day then and start that way?
We, you know, we had read all this stuff about transitioning and all that. And Mike was like, let's just cold turkey it and just do it. And that's what we did. And it was fine. We didn't have any problems. So, I mean, you know, after our cows have their calf in the spring now, we bring them down and we milk them right at that one that had the calf right away to try to get the colostrum. So because we do take the calf and become the calves' parents. You know, we need that colostrum, so we milk that cow, but we don't milk her again later. I mean, that's it. It's just not till the next day. And, you know... It's just like us when we have babies. I mean, you know, it's your milk comes in and, you know, it's a little tough and maybe at first, but they're fine and they adjust and the milk flow evens out and it works fine.
There might be a few days of discomfort.
Yes. Yeah.
Annoyance on their part, but.
As a general rule, though, they have all done well. So, and, you know, it should attribute to a longer lifespan
it should,
for them as well. You know, we've read
a longer lifespan that they'll be milking for you,
right?
That they're usable, right. Which is when we talked about that as far as chickens. I don't know that we've talked about that specifically here on the podcast, but you know, as far as a sustainability, you know. Mm-hmm. Being able to keep your cows an additional however many years is definitely more sustainable mm-hmm. and better for you because you don't have to make that right. investment again or, you know, right. the training and all that kind of stuff.
Right.
So,
right. Yeah.
It's kind of like, you know, maintaining your car so it lasts you 30,000 extra miles, you know, mm-hmm. when you don't have a sure. car payment on it. That's way better than having to buy a new car.
Well, and that's right. when you said that you said the 30%. Mm-hmm. Reduction in milk is a 50% time savings, but then right. also it's
if you
it's
add
a savings
in additional
on,
years of you get out of your cow. Mm-hmm, yeah. Right.
Well, and that's less input, you know, we don't have to run our milking system. Mm-hmm. We don't have to, you know, clean, you know, have the cleaning through the line, all that, doing that again. I mean, mm-hmm. so there are other things you save on as well.
Right.
Mm-hmm. But I know you guys have talked before it's really, you know, the time that you put into something, mm-hmm. oftentimes we don't count that,
yeah.
but you don't get that back. That's so right. for us, that is a big factor, mm-hmm. is the time.
What, you want to have a life? You don't just want to be milking cows all the time? Come on.
I thought you wanted to be a farmer.
Yes. Jump in with both feet. Why don't you? So we also had a couple questions about, do you think we covered that all right with having a
yeah.
family cow? Yeah.
yeah.
So as far well,
let's talk a little bit real quick about as far as like a one or two cows if you have one.
Mm-hmm.
So, and they want to graze their cows on pasture. Like how often, I mean, it depends on the pasture obviously, but walk us through like, or give us a little bit of a timeline, like in a week period or whatever, like how often you move your cows. Mm-hmm.
Well, Mike moves them every day.
Does he?
He moves okay. them every day. Mm-hmm. And I don't think he could give you an exact space because mm-hmm. he knows the fields and
right.
how lush or lush,
right.
not lush
on the
that
grass.
Section is. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And probably the rainfall you're having
yep.
and all of that,
yep.
which
so,
is something you kind of need to learn and monitor.
Yeah.
Which I think I've read that. There's a book called Grass-Fed Beef. I think I put it in the Grass-Fed Cattle, which I remember reading that. And they talked a lot in that book about pasture and learning to kind of monitor mm-hmm. the pasture and figure out when you need to move your cow depending on the grass because you don't want mm-hmm. them to eat it down mm-hmm. too much and
right
because
they
to
could
make
kill
sure
it sure
that they eat enough of it mm-hmm. so that the good species survive and that kind of stuff.
That's
so
right.
there's definitely you should do some homework on that to figure that out mm-hmm.
and a lot of that can probably be gleaned, and I'm sure Mike picked up a lot of that from Joel Salatin in his research.
He did,
because I mean that's his thing, is that
right.
he's mm-hmm. a grass farmer
mm-hmm.
And because obviously
it's a foundation, it's like building a house without a foundation. If you mm-hmm. try to
oh that's
start
the base
your dairy
that, yeah.
herd without
oh, yeah.
before, I mean you definitely need to like that we said last week in the permaculture, they said mm-hmm. It's better off to take a year
yes.
and spend the time improving your soil and remineralizing your soil before you mm-hmm. start planting trees or any of that, because mm-hmm. you're more than going to make up for that year later on. And so if you want to get a cow, it's definitely wise to read about good pasture in your area, maybe frost seed your pastures, add some minerals.
Absolutely.
Because mm-hmm. all of that's not only going to make your cows healthier, but it's going to make their milk healthier.
Well, and on right. a small scale too, I mean, if somebody's committed enough to get a cow mm-hmm. for their homestead,
yeah.
you know, and they have an acre and a half, 2 acres, 3 acres that they're going to do rotational grazing on, that's not the only animal they're going to have as
right.
well.
Mm-hmm.
So then mm-hmm. you have to factor in, you know, how much the chickens are scratching up your mm-hmm. 1.5 to 2 acres and so mm-hmm. on, and figure out that balance on how to have all those animals working together. And that's
right.
that's the beauty of permaculture again,
right,
which I'm sure we're going to be saying a lot over the next, you know, several weeks as we discuss that.
Yeah.
But that you figure out those systems and how those animals, and again, Joel Salatin is very big into this, how those animals can all work together and do mm-hmm. what that animal does.
Right, because your cows will improve
the whole
Absolutely.
System.
I was actually
right.
just
Absolutely.
Reading an article about people who feed clover seeds and all of those. They actually just mm-hmm. mix them in with,
wow.
they'll feed their cows a little bit of grain in the winter and mix the pasture seeds in with that so that the cows eat them, and then they put them out on the fields and then they, you know.
They seed it.
And because,
yeah,
and it
says cows are doing your seeding for you.
You know, the manure piles then, because they're so high in nitrogen, they often will burn and kill the grass that's underneath them. Mm-hmm. And then that gives like a little weed-free zone mm-hmm. for yeah. the clover and mm-hmm. the pasture seeds to then not have the competition to start, mm-hmm. Which is kind of an interesting way to do it, because then that would definitely, and frost seeding is very similar. You mm-hmm. scatter the seed and let the cold, you know, mm-hmm. the thaws and the freezes kind of work the seeds down right. into the soil.
Well, in several of our fields used to be a Christmas tree farm. Mike's mm-hmm. grandma rented it out for a guy to sell Christmas trees. Mm-hmm. Well, when those Christmas trees got taken down, you know, there was a lot of work that needed done to get the fields back to being fields. Mm-hmm. But you know, that's pretty expensive to mm-hmm. hire someone to come in and do that. So there's several fields that we've just kind of allowed the animals to go in there and do their right. thing. And it's amazing the grasses that are coming up yeah. and mm-hmm. How great they look yeah. when we didn't really do mm-hmm. anything other than put the animals in it. Mm-hmm. So,
and when you read about why rotational grazing is so beneficial, it's because the grasses, it's actually healthy for the grass to be grazed down. Mm-hmm. I mean, when you think about the prairies and you read about the buffalo herds and all of that, mm-hmm. I mean, they talk about the most pasture-based books are going to talk about the history of how that's actually really beneficial for the mm-hmm. landscape to improve the quality of what's there and to help with weeds and all of that.
Well, and you don't
have
one species that takes over and
right.
shades all the others
out.
So
it's actually beneficial for your land to consider mm-hmm. getting some sort of animal that can graze. Mm-hmm.
Well, and that's, speaking of rotational grazing, you know, that's what the herds did.
Right. Oh, yeah,
naturally. Because they would go where the food was.
Left to their own devices. So, they would just move along.
Yeah, they would mow something down and then move on to
a greener pasture. Well, and it's good to have more, you know, of a variety of animals on it. Because mm-hmm. a goat's going to eat something different than a cow, than a horse, than a, you know, so the more that you have, the better your fields are going to be.
Mm-hmm. And that's, I mean, mm-hmm. rotational grazing really is permaculture. I mean, that's, yeah. you know, mm-hmm. the principle behind it. So mm-hmm. we're going to say permaculture yeah. a lot.
And what do you think about a cow? So cows are like herd animals. Mm-hmm. What do you think about a single cow? I mean, you know cows and you've seen kind of how they interact with each other. Like, what's your, yeah. do you think people should try to get two? I mean, obviously, if they don't have that much space, one is.
What do you guys think? I don't know. It seems like ours do like to be together.
Yeah.
And, you know, let's say we have one that's ready to have her calf mm-hmm. And the other ones haven't yet, or they're not even close according to our due dates that we guess. Mm-hmm. We might bring one down separate and mm-hmm. she's just miserable till her friends yeah. come down, you know, so.
Till the ladies come down to keep her company.
Yeah. yeah. But, you know, but the people that bought the one from us, they did just buy one,
yeah.
you know, and, but they were always out there with her.
Right. And
stuff.
Maybe that's where the buying a calf and yeah. making it more of a member yeah. of the family helps. Cause yeah. of course then the cow thinks they're human.
Right.
Kind of like our dog does.
yeah. Well, and if you buy one that's bred that has, you know, yeah. they're going to have a calf. So then it'll
that's
quickly
true.
Become two.
Right.
So, they do like to be together mm-hmm. and it is fun to watch them play. It's cute. There's nothing like watching the calves running and playing and kicking their heels up. And mm-hmm. around here, it seems in the evening, they just love to take laps and just run together and mm-hmm. it's great. Mm-hmm. That's great.
Do you have any other questions on that? Or I was going to move about to the storage, cause we did have a few questions about storage of raw milk and.
Oh yeah. Well, I have a few more questions about cows. So what do you feed your cows?
I keep
then?
Trying to, you know, but
well, I'm trying to think of what questions mm-hmm. what questions yeah. people might have. So you get this cow and you have them out in your yard, you know, mm-hmm. what do you do in the winter? Do you don't keep your cows in a barn. They're back in
no.
the fields.
Yeah.
The only time
ours are in the barn is if we're milking them.
Okay.
So, and in the winter there's a field, we call it a sacrifice field. And I need to say that doesn't mean that's where we go and we kill animals. Because
that's
I've said that
thinks.
Before and people have said, really? And they look at us like, oh, you guys are weird.
The burnt off. Oh,
that isn't what it means.
You should call it. That's gotta be funny. Yeah.
No, it's a field that it doesn't matter if they mess it up because the grass is the base of our farm. So mm-hmm. if we keep them on our good fields and they ruin our good fields,
right,
that's gonna
winter.
Hurt mm-hmm. right in the winter.
So maybe it's beneficial to have an area of your
it is beneficial.
Your farm or your homestead or
yes.
whatever where you can keep them in the winter.
And there's no barn there, there's mm-hmm. just trees mm-hmm. for shelter, right. and since there's more than one of them, they tend to buddy up, and mm-hmm. They just naturally know where to go in the low spots, you mm-hmm. know, so they're going to have a windbreak or whatever. And
and just put hay out there for them.
Yeah. Mike goes out in either square bales or round bales. Mm-hmm. And it's so far we've been able to stick with the hay that we've harvested here. Mm-hmm. So we haven't had to buy off farm since that very beginning when we bought organic hay. Mm-hmm. So that has been a huge blessing because that can be a huge expense.
Right.
But yeah, he'll go and he'll unroll like a round bale. And, you know, they just, you can see where, you know, it's really, that helps with the grass to come back too, to unroll that. And you can see where he's unrolled it and they eat it. Mm-hmm. Or he'll take up some square bales and, you know, put them in different strategic locations. And, yeah.
And it's something to consider. Figure out how much you might have to. Definitely do the calculations of how much you're going to have to spend for the winter. If you don't, I mean, if you're doing this on a small scale, you probably don't have hay fields to harvest. So figure out how much you're going to have to pay and figure out if it's worthwhile for you to do that or just buy your milk from someone else, like Mike and Don, who do it.
Yeah. So, well, and, you know, that was another reason seasonal was good for us, too, because, you know, it does take a lot of energy for the animal to produce the milk.
That's true.
So in the winter when they're only eating hay, because it isn't the same as fresh pasture. But, you know.
And you can tell that when you get grass-based raw milk, because there's a huge difference in the milk when we first start picking it up in, like, late February, March sometime. You know, and the cream is white and there's not as much cream. And then you get towards, you know, end of May, beginning of June, and the cream is like
bright
yellow, and there's more of it, and the milk starts to taste a little bit grassy, and
oh, there's definite taste difference too between hay milk and grass milk. We always joke about the transition milk, you know, I mean, when the ramps are coming up and they're eating the ramps in the spring, you can definitely tell for a little while there that it's transition
cheese making milk right there, a little oniony cheese. Yeah, and I mean, I guess that's something to consider too. But let me think, what other questions? So, feed him hay. Oh yeah, let's talk a little bit about breeding, because this might be weird for like someone who has one cow. Like, what are the ins and outs? What do you recommend for someone that has one cow as far as breeding?
Maybe saying the ins and outs isn't it?
Because you're clearly you're clearly going to have to breed your cow if you want to get milk.
Yeah.
And you do yours like on a yearly basis. So what?
Well, I mean, for us, the way we do it, we have a bull.
Right.
But I suppose if you only have one, and I mean, it's like a pet, you're going to know when it's in heat. So you could AI artificially inseminate them, you know. You just have to call the company and they come out with their semen when they're in heat and they do their thing, and you know, you can do that. I don't know if it'd be worth it to do the whole bull thing for just like one.
Are there, because I know that we saw this in,
that'd be a good small local business. You could be
bull
like
rental?
The bull for all of these family cows.
But there's issues with that though too, because then, you know, you either have to take your animal to someone else's farm and it's not the same as yours, or someone's bringing theirs to yours and who knows what that's introducing. So that's a, I don't know, that would be case by case type thing.
And maybe it's beneficial to think about having a small herd so you can have a, I mean, I know bulls are, they're like the male honeybees. They eat and don't really do.
Don't produce much.
But when you consider like the quality of the genes or, you know, just the more natural methods, that might be a worthy thing, especially if you want to breed in certain characteristics, or if you're doing like a Dexter cow that's a beef milk thing and you're going to raise the offspring for beef and that kind of stuff. It might be worth, it might be worth having. Waiting so you can get a few more.
Right.
This might be a better question for Mike, but how much is artificial insemination?
Well, that is a good question.
It depends
and I'm not
on the bull, right? From what I've read.
Oh, there's this catalog and you can look through.
There's a catalog.
Oh, yeah. It's a book called, I think it's a book called Coop, which is a hilarious book. It's this book this guy wrote about building a chicken coop and everything that happened during, during the process. But he grew up on a dairy farm. I think it was a dairy farm. But he talks about artificial insemination, how when they were kids, they would love to look through the catalog at all the different bulls and all the different like genes and positives of this. And I mean, obviously you can get like super expensive
Oh, prize yeah. It's winning crazy.
Jeans. And
yeah.
then you get like, you know, he said his parents always opted for like the 2-for-1 special generic in the back of the book. You know?
I honestly don't remember, Brian, how much it was. And we did not have a good success rate with it, but mm-hmm. it was also right after we got the cows. We didn't know what we were doing. Mm-hmm. They're transitioning to a new place. And, mm-hmm. you know, so it perhaps wasn't the best timing to try that. Mm-hmm. I know other people have had great success with it. So. Mm-hmm.
And that might be something to consider too, as far as having just one cow,
right.
because if your cow doesn't get and if your cow doesn't get bred or mm-hmm. if it doesn't take, mm-hmm. then you're also
in trouble.
Yeah.
Is that something then that you can, if it doesn't take the first time, that you can retry?
Yeah, you'll know. In what is it, 28 days? I think it's in 28 days. If they're in another heat, then mm-hmm. obviously the first one didn't take.
Okay.
And that's how we actually figure out our due dates, mm-hmm. Because, you know, we have a board in the barn where we write down whenever we see somebody in heat mm-hmm. or acting goofy, because they don't all show heats in the same way. Mm-hmm. They're just like us. They have personalities that are just different. Mm-hmm. So we'll write something down if they do something goofy and write that date down, and then we'll count, you know, we'll look on the calendar, and 28 days later, if they're doing the same thing, well, obviously the bull didn't get them or whatever.
Right. Mm-hmm.
But then, you know, after we take the bull out and we have the vet come out, he is able to tell when he does the pregnancy check approximately what the size of that calf mm-hmm. based on our breed date. Mm-hmm. He's able to say, oh yeah, that's about right. And so that's how we kind of get our due dates for everybody. Mm-hmm. So there's a science to it. It's kind of amazing.
Yeah. Yeah. And as far as calving is concerned, that would probably be kind of mm-hmm. stressful for the first time person, but you said earlier mm-hmm. they just kind of
most of the time
for the most part if you've got a healthy cow,
that's right, and yep, I mean we've had, you know, I would say 95% of the time mm-hmm. everything is a-okay, and mm-hmm. it's one of those deals. You go up in the field and there's either a calf there or part of a calf hanging out, and you're going to get to watch the birth, and mm-hmm. so those are wonderful miracles to get to see. Mm-hmm. And sometimes you even get it on film, which is even more fun.
You put it on YouTube.
But, you know, if, you know, you see that, you know, a day has gone by and there's, you know, the feet are still sticking out and yeah, there's no progress, obviously, you know, you're going to need to help. And Mike has mm-hmm. had to do that a couple times. Mm-hmm. And we've had occasional where we've gone up there and, you know, there's a dead calf and, mm-hmm. It's just how it is sometimes.
Right, yeah.
You know, or where you have twins and you didn't realize it. Right. So you have one and you think you're done, you know, and then you go back up and you find that there actually was a deceased calf. So, mm-hmm. you know, you just don't know what you're going to find.
And that's something you definitely have to be prepared for if you're going to keep any kind of animal. So it's death.
Yes.
Because it's going to happen. And
yes.
I mean, you have to not feel guilty about it. You have to do what you can,
that's
make
right.
your animals as healthy as possible, and realize that that's part of the natural way to eliminate mm-hmm. weak and
absolutely
realize that it's actually, mm-hmm. You know, a positive part of the natural cycle, and not beat yourself up over.
That's right.
And question whether or not you did everything right.
That's
and,
right.
You know.
Yeah.
Which I think happens anyway, because, you know, even with keeping bees and so on, when mm-hmm. and I know that you guys have done a little bit of that, and, mm-hmm. you know, something doesn't work out with that, and you're just like, oh, what did I do, or what could I have done differently or better, or, you
and
know.
Sometimes it's just...
It's just the way it is. I mean, that things die. Mm-hmm. You know, we don't like that, and especially when you're doing it for a business, because
absolutely.
Then that's profit.
Yeah,
right.
That you're seeing, but
and there end, there's instances where your cow might die as well. I mean, we had that where one. I mean, she was totally fine. Her calf was fine, and went up there the next day, and she was just dead. Mm-hmm. You know, don't know why. Mm-hmm. We were okay because we have a herd, but if that mm-hmm. were your family cow, you know, that would hurt worse.
Right.
Mm-hmm. But that can happen. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of just a part of farming.
How, this kind of going back to the beginning, but how much milk does each cow produce?
I think our cows, their average, I would say, is like 2 gallons a day.
Wow. Okay.
I think is when you go the whole year out, I would say it's about that. Hmm. Maybe at 1.5. On mm-hmm. some of them, on some of the smaller ones or whatever. Mm-hmm. But yeah.
So really, if you were just getting a family cow, then one cow would
be way more than enough. I mean, unless you have 15 in your family.
Yeah. Or, I mean, you can use it to make cheese and everything else.
If you have a pig, you can feed your pig.
Yes.
I mean, it's definitely, and that's something that might come later.
Right.
You know, I know a lot of people who get a cow and then they're like, oh my goodness, we have way mm-hmm. too much milk. What am I going to do with this milk? Mm-hmm. I cannot make any more cheese.
Right.
So then they end up buying a pig or feeding it to their chickens or, you know, getting more animals to help
kind of
right. maximize what they're getting.
Mm-hmm. Well, and that's another, I hate to say it. We need
permaculture.
Yeah. There's a permaculture. Yeah, we need a jingle for that. Because that's, I mean, one of the aspects of permaculture is reducing your inputs or your outside inputs. And so, yeah. you know, mm-hmm. having that you can then sort of cycle back into, into the process. So, another interesting thing. Yeah. So
now that you've bred your cow and she's had a calf, like, mm-hmm. what do you do then? Because mm-hmm. I mean, I think that some people, if you don't do this, you don't know, like, what do you expect? What do you do? Mm-hmm. You talked a little bit earlier about milking, the first milking to get the colostrum. Like, mm-hmm. I don't know how that works as far as if it's one cow and you want to keep it for your milk, if you mm-hmm. should separate and become the calf's parent, or... I think there are different schools of...
Well, there are. And quite honestly, we really like the model where you allow the calf to stay with the mom mm-hmm. and, you know, she feed the calf and then you also milk them and, mm-hmm. and get the excess. We really like that and tried for a little while to do that, but we're just not set up that way. Mm-hmm. You know, I said before, a lot of our area is single wire fence. Well, a calf doesn't know electric. A calf can go under a fence very easily, and that stresses the mom out. Yeah. You know, then when you have to have an area to put the calf when if you're going to walk her down,
right.
you know, to the barn to get milk. So, you know, you try to take the calf, and that stresses mm-hmm. the mom. Then she doesn't let her milk down. And I mean, it was just for us. It's just easier for us to take the calf and become the parent. And mm-hmm. so, you know, we make sure those first couple of days they get their mom's milk. Colostrum. Mm-hmm. So, because we have a bucket that we can milk in so mm-hmm. that it doesn't go in the line with the other milk. So we do that. But then after that, they can get from the herd. Mm-hmm. And we feed them, what do we give them? The calves get a half of a gallon of milk twice a day, or do we do three times? So you forget when you're in your dry month weeks. Mm-hmm. Twice
You'll
a day.
You'll remember here pretty quickly.
I know. Come on back to me.
All right. So it's perfectly feasible to let mm-hmm. the calf.
Oh, yeah. If you can do that.
Like,
and
do normal and then just milk afterwards. Mm-hmm. Although I must say that I was talking to our other friendly dairy farmer mm-hmm. up in Maine, mm-hmm. and she is keeping someone's cow over the winter because mm-hmm. one of her cows didn't breed, so she only had mm-hmm. one cow that was milking, because she lets them go dry, but she has three cows and staggers them, so
it.
She's always mm-hmm. got milk for her customers. So that's what she does.
Right.
But one of her cows didn't breed, so she was only milking from one cow who was, you know, getting towards the end of her year, and so she wasn't getting a ton of milk. So she was going to buy another cow and looked around, and eventually it turned out that she found someone who happened to be going to Florida for the winter, and they had a cow with a calf. Mm-hmm. So that was milking. Mm-hmm. So it worked out for the benefit of both of them, because she's watching their cow and she gets to have the milk. But mm-hmm. she was letting the calf drink from the mom and was going to, you know, milk the second amount or the remaining amount. But she found out that the mom was like, I don't know, cows are interesting, letting the calf have all the cream and not mm-hmm. putting any in the milk that she was milking. So she ended up taking the calf away and then, mm-hmm. you know, milking and then giving the calf milk after that.
There's trial and error in there. And there's all kinds of tweaks mm-hmm. that you'd have to
figure out. And I'm sure
it depends
on the cow and their temperament,
absolutely.
Too.
Absolutely.
So.
Mm-hmm. I didn't know cows had an inbuilt mm-hmm. cream separator.
Yeah, I guess so.
Pretty amazing.
Yeah.
And it's amazing that they
I've heard that. Mm-hmm.
Because milk, the cream rises to the top, but, you know, they send it down to the bottom.
They've got a little agitator in there that's mixing it around.
Remarkable. Maybe they have two compartments. Maybe they have, like, a cream compartment and a skim milk compartment. When I was little, one of my thumbs was chocolate and one was vanilla milk, and I would suck my thumbs.
Jeez. Jeez.
We both made that sound at the same time.
So I think that's all the questions people would have on.
Well,
what
then,
do you think?
So then we had storage, as far as like storage of raw milk and mm-hmm.
how long
does it last
and that kind of stuff.
And those sorts of things. And what's the best way if somebody is doing this on a small scale, mm-hmm. So they milk their cow, what's the best way to transition that? Should they stick it in the freezer to cool it down mm-hmm. quickly, or
definitely quick cooling is good. I guess you could put it in a freezer for a little bit, but you have to remember to take it.
Right. Yeah.
And that's always my issue. So, you know, a nice cold fridge mm-hmm. as soon as you can is mm-hmm. always good. Quicker cooling is better, and it will sour less quickly.
Mm-hmm. If you do it in the morning, you could always do, if you just have your family cow, when you make ice cream and you want to quick cool your custard or whatever you do, like an ice bath. So you mm-hmm. could
Sure. Mm.
Have a
but then
bucket
you're doing
of
a bucket of ice for right. every time you milk, which is every right. day. So mm-hmm. that's kind right. of.
Mm-hmm. But if you're doing it and you want that particular batch of milk to store even longer, you mm-hmm. could do mm-hmm. it.
Sure.
You
that's
know,
true.
Sure.
For that or.
Sure. And I mean, always. We have a bulk tank. So, you know, technically all the milk could go in there and it gets cold quickly. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But we use all of our milk every day, either for customers or for ourselves. So we don't even use our bulk tank. In fact, mm-hmm. last year we never used it at all. Mm-hmm. So, you know, everything gets bottled or. You know, something mm-hmm. is done with it every day. Mm-hmm. So, you know, similar to if you just had one cow, you know, you would just bottle what you have and stick it in your fridge and you should be fine. Now you'll notice like when it's super hot and humid that we often have here in Ohio, mm-hmm. If you, you know, it'll go sour quicker, mm-hmm. you know, so it may not last. I mean, I think here normally you can go about 2 weeks mm-hmm. with your refrigerated milk before you notice it really starting to sour. Mm-hmm. But, you know, when it's humid and hot, it'll be a little quicker, mm-hmm. You know, so that make, you know, the weather makes a difference.
Mm-hmm. And we use 1/2 gallon mason jars as you, mm-hmm. you know, we mm-hmm. do that when we get milk from you and right. we do that now at our other farm. And one of the considerations you need to think of if you're putting it in your fridge, to not throw, you know, 2 gallons of milk, which would mm-hmm. be 4 1/2 gallon mason jars in there, all touching each other.
Mm.
You
all
know, you
want to
think about
area.
Moving them around, maybe be putting them in a line at the back of your fridge, like the coldest spot of your fridge. If you're doing this on a small scale and want that milk to last as long right. as possible, that's something, you know, you should think about not putting mm-hmm. it in the front of the fridge, that kind of stuff.
Sure, sure.
But yeah. I had a friend actually, and I should have looked up her website. If I have time, I'll do that. But she canned her milk. They had a family mm-hmm. cow, just one cow. And she canned hers, but she said you always had to skim the cream off of it because the mm-hmm. cream got really weird mm-hmm. if you would can it. Mm-hmm. They didn't have electricity, so she didn't have the option of freezing. Mm-hmm. But freezing is what you guys do.
Freezing is what we do, mm-hmm. yeah. And there's tweaks with that as well. That mm-hmm. first year, I think you guys might have been with yeah. us that first year, where we actually froze the milk in 1 gallon plastic jugs. Mm-hmm. And just basically we put the milk in there. You know, left room for expansion, put the lid on and put in the freezer, and that was it. Never mm-hmm. touched it again until we went to thaw it. But what we ended up with was pulpy milk. Mm-hmm. Now, there's nothing wrong with it. It was fine, but
still
it's a texture thing.
But yeah, the texture
it's a texture thing, fine. And especially with kids, right, guys?
Yes.
It wasn't real high up on the list
yeah.
For wanting to drink it. But
yeah.
then
we never drank ours like by the glass. It was always
oh, yeah, I had
heated
to do,
up and put in uh-huh. coffee or something.
Yeah. So, but then we learned just some internet research that if you shake the milk while it's freezing and the cream doesn't have time to separate from the milk, mm-hmm. When you thaw it, you know, it's much different. And we also went to freezing it in 1/2 gallon sizes, so there was less of a volume of milk to freeze.
Mm-hmm. Which would make it freeze faster.
Yeah. And now we don't really, I mean, it's definitely not pulpy. Mm-hmm. It's definitely different. It's not
I
the
think
same
the
as fresh.
Is different.
The cream is
it,
different.
It like separates out more, or it doesn't mix in as well.
It definitely changes. Something mm-hmm. changes.
It changes the chemical. I mean, yeah. it does in food. Like if you freeze rice, it's really weird because it mm-hmm. like freezes the water mm-hmm. and shatters some of the.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
That's what. Yeah.
Yeah.
So it has to somehow change like the composition right. of the milk.
But see, for us, you know, you guys, I know you guys have talked in the past too about it's where your priorities are, mm-hmm. and see, for us. We aren't going to go out and buy
right.
other milk. Mm-hmm. So it's like, well, it's not ideal. Mm-hmm. But, you know, we actually don't have any problem with drinking it now. Mm-hmm. And most of our customers choose that option that they mm-hmm. want also to, during the fresh times of the year when we have the fresh milk, they want to also save some back so that they have some to get through the winter as mm-hmm. well. So, you know, we do that. And this year I was excited. Something different I did was I had read someone whipped the cream mm-hmm. it was separated already from the milk, and they whipped their cream and then they froze it in dollops on mm-hmm. parchment paper and so now I have cream dollops to put in my coffee.
That's
and
so
it
nice.
Works fabulously, so I'll be promoting that next year.
That's a good idea.
Because that is one of the things that I really miss was fresh cream. Mm-hmm. Just I mean, we only have two cups of coffee in the morning, and I really like to have my cream in there. Mm-hmm. So it's nice to now have that.
Mm-hmm. And that's, I think that's one of the benefits, and we may have talked about this before, about cultivating a simple life, is that you're always trying to find ways to to tweak and change what you have to make mm-hmm. it work for your needs so that you yes. don't have to go out and yes. buy something. Or, yes. I mean, you'll do almost whatever you can to avoid mm-hmm. buying a product that you don't feel comfortable buying. Like, you don't want to vote for this with your dollars. Right. And that's what I talk about. You do not want to spend your money and invest it in this way or right. give it to this company. So you'll do almost whatever you can mm-hmm. to try to avoid that. And that's where yeah. some of these,
you go without or you're okay with going yeah. without. And that is, that's new for us yeah. really since we started milking, because that was just the beginning of our change in the way that we ate, mm-hmm. Started to eat. So yeah, that was a good change, I think. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And it's kind of fun. It can mm-hmm. be challenging at yes. times, but it's kind of yes. fun. And when you finally figure it out, like yeah. the dollops of whipped cream, I mean, how happy are you about that?
I'm super happy about that.
And every morning when you drink your coffee, you're like, oh, awesome.
That's right. Yeah.
So that's really, that's great.
So is there any other advice or any other things that we're missing that you want to add in, or do you think we've pretty much?
Oh, I mean, I'm sure you could probably come up with a million questions. And
and maybe we should ask, I know one of our readers asked about like goats, and I know you guys have had goats and you've offered to give me those goats.
Yes. So
you might be a good person to answer this question. I don't know if you milked your goats or if you ever had milking goats.
No.
What's the difference between a goat and a cow? And
you know, I only know what other people have told me. I mm-hmm. you know, I haven't done the research myself, you know, because mm-hmm. it was just something that we weren't. I mean, our setup is for cows. Mm-hmm. For a goat, to milk goats, you're going to need, you know, a miniature scale of what we have.
Right.
So we don't have that. But what I've heard is that some people who can't tolerate cow's milk can tolerate mm-hmm. the goat's milk, and mm-hmm. something about the, you know, the cream doesn't separate the right. same, or maybe a little bit, but mm-hmm. nothing like with a cow. Mm-hmm. You know, I've heard that. Ours weren't milking. They were just for pets. Mm-hmm. And actually we got them to help with eating the poison ivy, and, you mm-hmm. know, they're a good mm-hmm. complement to have, you
right.
know. Pasturing,
and
but
they're gone now.
Oh, see, Michael, now he feels comfortable enough to talk. Yes, they ended up being more of a challenge to yeah. our family than anything, because they were just escape artists, and all they did was
I remember once we came, it was in October, or mm-hmm. maybe it was in December, when we stopped by and we were dropping something off or picking something up, and we looked over and here a goat was just like climbed under the fence yep. and came out. Yep. And we're like, I don't think that goat was supposed to do that.
Yeah, they were very frustrating, especially to Mike, because, you know, he's used to the cows who respect the electric fence, you know, and mm-hmm. the goats just did not. So they just didn't mesh with our family. And that's okay, because not everybody has to be a goat family.
Right. So. Mm-hmm. Right. And maybe you can try both and decide how do goats and cows intermingle? Do they do all right? I know you said that the goats kind of showed them who was boss, and the calves would.
Our goats were the bullies. Yeah. They bullied the calves around, even uh-huh. though we had like a Nigerian dwarf and a pygmy. Mm-hmm. So they were smaller goats, mm-hmm. And like more petite than the calves, but they mm-hmm. still bullied the calves mm-hmm. around. They were afraid of them.
Yeah. So I don't know. Maybe you could read up on doing both and try both and see which works best for you, and if you like the goat milk and mm-hmm. that kind of
thing. Well, and that's kind of our philosophy all along, is that the good thing about what we do, what you and I do, is that we're not doing it for an income. So
right.
we mm-hmm. can afford, mm-hmm. in quotes, to experiment
right.
with different things. You know, like when we were doing bees, we said, well, it's a good thing that this isn't our livelihood, because right. we would be in trouble. But again, you're not trying to do it on the scale mm-hmm. of, you know, making a lot of money off of it. So I guess mm-hmm. that would be kind of the final question is, are you going to continue to do this? Is this something that you want to do for the rest of your lives? Or is that mm-hmm. still kind of up in the air? Or,
well, you know, I guess the answer I would give right now would be, Lord willing, we would like to continue mm-hmm. because we just feel strongly that trying to get people to think about where their food comes from mm-hmm. and I don't know how to word it, to be more responsible is mm-hmm. not taking someone else's word for what's healthy, but mm-hmm. investigating yourself and thinking about how things used to be done. And, you know, that education is something that's important to us, and mm-hmm. we're raising our kids with teaching them is just that. So we'd like to be able to continue to do that. you know, unfortunately, we started out with a lot of debt, so we're still trying to fix that. And, mm-hmm. you know, if we hadn't have gone into this with that issue, I mm-hmm. think we would be fine. If we would have simplified our life first, mm-hmm. I think we would be fine right now. So, you know, while we're struggling right now financially, the farming part is doing well, mm-hmm. you know. So, yeah, I hope we can continue to do it. Mm-hmm. You know, I hope that our kids see the benefit of us being able to work together. I mean, right now, Mike's working mm-hmm. a temporary job off farm for a little while, for like a month, and we're only day three into it.
Yeah.
And already it's like, oh, I miss Dad. It's, you know, weird. It's, yeah. it's just really weird.
Because since we both work at home, and we sit in the same office all day, and it's mm-hmm. not like we're talking all day, but it's
sure.
there's just that it's normal.
Yeah.
And then when it's not like that, yeah. it feels very weird and abnormal.
Well, and it gives you that perspective, though, for the families that, you know, don't mm-hmm. have the privilege of being able to stay together mm-hmm. all day like we mm-hmm. have.
Right.
Boy, how do you have that relationship right. when you only have these small hours in the evening right. that you're actually yeah. together?
And we, interestingly, were talking about that, I think, last week. We were talking about how I was saying, it's interesting to me. It's really weird that we both obviously have different jobs, and we're sitting in the same office and we're doing different jobs. But because we're sitting there and we talk to each other and we ask each other questions and we sometimes joke during the day, and he knows what I'm doing and I know what he's doing. Mm-hmm. And I said, isn't it weird that when we're done with work at the end of the day, I don't have to like ask you
That's
how
right.
your day went mm-hmm. and get like, and get like, it was all right.
Yeah.
I know exactly yeah. what has gone on in your day, like the yeah. intricacies,
yeah.
because I was there all day. So it's interesting because that's a whole different
yeah.
weird level of involvement that I think yeah. some people can handle and some people probably
sure.
couldn't.
Sure.
Because it can be intense at times. Sure. But yeah, it's that whole
yeah.
relationships are completely different. It's a
they
whole
are.
Different level mm-hmm. when you're around somebody 24/7 and
Absolutely.
Experiencing everything that they are.
Well, and you know, sometimes when you're doing that, maybe that gets old for a little while, mm-hmm. you know, and
yeah.
so then you experience, you know, that absence and it's like, oh,
yeah.
that was really nice,
yeah.
you know, so yeah, this is a season. We have a lot of seasons, mm-hmm. you know, and so it's for a short time and we're just thankful the Lord is providing, and you know what, every month he has been, so it's mm-hmm. good. It is good.
And I know that Mike was an engineer before
right,
this, right? And what did you do before this?
Oh, I would say mostly like secretarial type stuff.
Okay. A little bit of this, a little
kind
bit of that.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
that was a lot of good experience for what you do for
yeah.
the farm.
Well, and it's funny, you're right. Because, and I was thinking about that just today, because it was always one of those things growing up, I did well in school. So everyone was like, oh, what do you want to be when you grow up? Oh, I want to be a secretary. I always loved being a secretary. But, oh, mm-hmm. you can't do that. You get too good of grades to be the secretary. You should
yeah.
be the boss. Well, you know what? So I went to school to try to do that, and I absolutely hated it.
Yeah.
I just wanted to be the secretary.
yeah. And so, it's like that 30% extra milk.
Yeah.
I mean, is it worth being a boss and making mm-hmm. more money, but having,
yeah.
you know, like 70% more stress?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Sometimes it's good
dying
to...
Dying at a young age because
yeah.
you're stress-related.
Yeah. Sometimes
yeah.
it's that trade-off, and it's really about... Yeah. figuring out what your values are and what you
yeah.
really want to do, and whether or not working extra hours mm-hmm. is it worth making a couple
That's
extra
right.
$1,000
well,
a year,
and, you know,
or would
and
you
with,
rather
yeah.
hang out with your family, or
yeah.
you know, cancel a bunch of your bills and mm-hmm. work less and
yes.
spend more time together, or spend more time gardening, or sit around right. and read for
well and the part that,
that
I like of farming Mike doesn't like. He doesn't mm-hmm. like being in the milk house and having to get the schedule and talking to the customers, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, it's
yeah.
not that he doesn't like talking to people, because
right.
he does,
yeah.
but
he's,
he's probably more yes
he's definitely an
yeah.
introvert
yeah.
yeah,
you know, whereas me, I love it, you know. Mm-hmm. And I enjoy the relationship
yeah.
part, and I enjoy, you know, the detail part and the blogging part and the writing, and you know,
mm-hmm.
that's the part that I like.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we complement each other well, I think, and it's fun to watch that developing in the boys and seeing, you know, how we can help them find what it is the Lord wants them to do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so definitely way more hands-on
mm-hmm.
Of a family than I ever imagined as a kid.
Mm-hmm.
Having one day for myself,
mm-hmm.
But it's just been great.
That's and
great.
That's kind of the neat thing, because the reason I asked that question was going back to what you said, if you wouldn't have come into it with debt, because obviously
mm-hmm.
we talked about debt on one of our shows,
mm-hmm.
And just this really, I mean, ties in, even though we're talking about really having a family cow so you can get some of your own milk. I mean, this really just brings home everything that we've been talking about, in that if you don't have debt, it opens up these opportunities.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And doing away with complications in your life, and doing away with, you know, TV or mm-hmm. whatever these distractions are that really distract right. you from the main purpose of yes. what life
and
is all about.
Your time and that's your right. money and your energy. Yep. And,
right. Yep. And what are the things that you do really value in your life? You know, whether that be your family or your mm-hmm. time or
being
or getting out in the garden.
Or,
yeah.
Right.
And what are the things that you need to do away with in order to
yes.
get more time, in order to be able to do the things that you really do enjoy mm-hmm. Or the things that bring you fulfillment. And so mm-hmm. it's interesting how, you know, even in discussing mm-hmm. artificial insemination, we can come around to.
Well, and then, you know, the other cool side of this is you meet people, like we've met you guys.
Mm-hmm.
And so here you guys are out there doing all this research for us that I never have time to do. So, you know, it's a circle,
right.
you know, and it goes
definitely,
around.
Definitely, I think part of cultivating simple is cultivating a community.
Absolutely.
Because, you know, I can't do everything.
Mm-hmm.
I can't.
Right.
At the moment, I cannot have a cow and mm-hmm. have my milk a cow once
right.
a day and
right.
be able to do all the things that I do.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
So, yeah, I'm going to go get milk from you guys or, you know, mm-hmm. Kara up in Maine.
Mm-hmm.
That, I mean, that's what it works. But developing this community of people.
Yes.
And, you know, it would be nice if you could develop enough of a community that you could kind of barter a little bit.
Absolutely.
And do away with having to earn money and trade.
Right.
Trade chores and jobs, and the mm-hmm. IRS would not like to hear that.
Gosh.
But
we love bartering.
Oh man, we just came from our tax meeting. Trust me.
Yeah.
But building community is, I think, a huge important mm-hmm. part of
I agree.
Cultivating simple, because
yes.
there, you know, self-sufficiency is a myth. You can't do that. And our friend Joan put it very smartly when we were chatting to her, and she said, "Well, it depends on your definition of self.
Mm-hmm.
If self is community, then it's completely possible."
Sure.
Mm-hmm.
She
Absolutely.
Said that sadly in our culture, self is self.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
It's not
That's right.
A community.
That's right.
So I think that that's something that, and it's great to do that. And that's one of the things I love about, mm-hmm. and I talked about it in the local food thing. I mean, the local food podcast, that's the best mm-hmm. benefit. Healthy food
mm-hmm.
is like
mm-hmm.
just
the icing on the cake compared yeah. to the mm-hmm. community and the people that you meet mm-hmm. and the interesting
but
relationships.
Sometimes
that
breaking
you
that
build.
Mold is hard because we grow up thinking I have to be able to do it all.
Yeah.
But you do get to that point where mm-hmm. I can't. We mm-hmm. can't do any more than we already have. So sometimes it's really nice when someone else starts our plants for us.
Yeah.
Because
yeah,
I just don't have time
nice. Yeah.
to go and do that when my top priority is homeschooling my kids
right.
in the winter or,
mm-hmm.
you know,
right.
so, yeah, but getting to that point
something,
is,
and you have to develop
yeah.
a relationship with someone to
yeah.
end up at that place. Cause you know, I remember talking to you like about that. I think it was last year or the year before about the plants and
yeah.
you're just like, well, you know, I
yeah.
can't do the plants in addition cause it's during
yeah.
calving season
yep.
and the first part of milking.
Yep.
And
it's insane. And baseball starts at the same time.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's good to know we've had this many years going into it because we're kind of prepared and we can kind of pray for it. But once like mid-March starts, it's
yeah.
insane here until
yeah.
like, you know, the end of May or so.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, it's a little crazy and
mm-hmm.
it can get a little overwhelming. So something's got to give because
mm-hmm.
you just can't do it all.
So mm-hmm. if people want to find out more about you guys, I mean, if unless people are listening in the immediate area, and that's the other interesting thing, you know, about sort of local small community.
Yeah.
But I know that you do have a blog.
Mm-hmm.
What's the address for that blog? We can put it in the show notes.
It is www.robertsfarm2004.wordpress.com.
All right. And we'll put that in the
mm-hmm.
show notes. So come on over there and I'm sure we're going to get lots of questions and so hopefully you'll be visiting the show notes and maybe can answer a few questions
well,
for
that
us.
That is actually
there.
One of my questions is where
oh.
is the show notes? Because when I type in Cultivate Simple, it brings up Chiute's Run.
Yes.
Yeah.
So
which
I get confused. Oh,
yes.
it is.
Well, and
yeah.
see, this is why, this is like community testing. And so this
okay.
maybe could be Brian's Geeky Corner.
We have many different domain names
okay.
that all point to my blog.
Oh,
so we have
okay.
Cultivate Simple, Cultivating the Simple Life,
mm-hmm.
SusieMorris.com, I think, points to ChiutesRun.com.
Mm-hmm.
And whenever, that's one of the things we do because we are internet, like online media people.
Yeah.
Whenever we think up of a domain name that might be interesting, we buy it and then usually just point it at my blog.
All right. Okay.
Because we thought
it's
of Cultivate Simple
plans.
A long time ago. I thought
mm-hmm.
Cultivate Simple would be great for, you know, some,
yeah.
I don't even know what I thought it would be good for. But we were like, oh, that's a great idea. Let's buy it. And yeah, here it is, a podcast, which is not what we originally bought the domain name for.
And so, and the ultimate goal is to have a separate section of the blog that is just for
the podcast,
okay, and have more of a dedicated section. And so, but I'm glad you asked that question, because if you go to, it's on the blog, it's just that gets posted.
Just find where the podcast is and go to the comments. Right. That's what you mean.
Yeah, it's like the post, the blog post.
See?
That shows
that's
us that
user
day.
Testing right there. That's user testing.
That's the show notes.
That's the stuff I do with my websites, and I should know to do that with the podcast.
The blog post that has this podcast in it is the show.
Well, I wasn't sure if I was supposed to like go to iTunes, and maybe there were more notes there.
Right.
But I'm always afraid to go there because of the whole data issue.
Yeah.
So
now
I know.
Mike and Don kind of live,
which is
funny.
Which is another challenge of being kind of a rural rural person.
Because it's really interesting. I think you guys just kind of got hosed in the deal because you live close to transmission lines for Time Warner Cable, which are right down the road, and yet you can't get any sort of high-speed internet at all here. So, So I help, speaking of Brian's Geeky Corner.
My IT department as well.
Don's IT department
as
well.
We come back to visit Brian
downloading podcasts.
I have a list of questions.
Yes. And so let's talk about the books of the week, because they all deal, I know it's a lot of the books that you've read, Suze, about.
Right. Right, and we can recommend probably anything by Joel Salatin as far as grazing and that, and reading up and research on that.
Yeah,
you know,
one of my favorite things about my wife is that she can carry on conversations with just about any person that we go meet. So the other day we were at the farmer's market in Belfast, and there was a lady there that raises water buffaloes. Mm. Now, how much do you know about water buffaloes?
Absolutely nothing.
Exactly. I've seen them on National Geographic because they are African animals, and that's about the extent of my of my knowledge. And yet Susie's like, oh, so, you know, how are they handling this winter? Because I know they don't like cold weather and blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, how? What?
Ironically, like a month before, I had just been reading about water buffalo and how they're used in farming and for milk and for dairy, because they produce really great milk that makes really great cheese, particularly mozzarella and yogurt and that kind of thing. So I've just been reading about it, and I was reading about this one farm that set up a herd and how they did it and where they got them from and the breeding and how water buffalo are different from like a regular cow. And yeah, so it was kind of funny. And then that thing they were talking about, how they're African animals, so they don't like the cold northern.
Oh yeah, I bet.
They need a barn.
Right.
Yeah.
Because we've been talking about that. I'll probably get Scottish Highland cows if I ever want beef cows, because you don't need a barn for them.
Right.
They can
kind
of forage in the woods if they need to, that kind of stuff. But yeah, so it was kind of funny.
It was just funny because I think the lady who was selling the meat was even taken aback. She was like, oh, well, yeah, no, they don't like it, you know. And so then they had this whole conversation
and
about
water
buffalo.
And she's like, we just, every week, you know, we clean out the barn. We put them outside and we clean out the barn on Saturday or Sunday. I can't remember. She said on the weekend, we're always just praying for a warm day on the weekend, because if it's not warm, the cows will, or, you know, the buffalo will not go outside. So it's kind of funny.
So some of the, I mentioned that because some of these books that you're going to mention, you've read, and it was just always funny to come home and see, you know, a grass-fed
beef
cattle laying on the coffee table, and I'm like, why is what? But then we'd come out to the farm here, and you and Mike would be having conversations about you know, the benefits and detriments of different breeds of cattle. So interesting. So what are the books of the week this week?
Well, I have small-scale livestock farming, which is, you know, I mean, most of these books pretty much cover the same thing. They're going to cover the ins and outs of different kinds of livestock. I don't think any of them are, the grass-fed cattle is the one that's specific to cattle, but most of these are across the board, so they'll cover goats, sheep, livestock in general. Small-scale livestock farming, which is a good book for if you want to do it on a small scale, clearly, you know. And I think that's our listener. I don't think many of our listeners are gearing up to start, you know, a 200-head dairy cow, the dairy farm, but...
A 200-head dairy cow? I hope they're not starting...
Well, you don't know nowadays. And then there's the Backyard Homestead Guide to Raising Farm Animals. And I think there are two of these. There's like a regular one that's just the Backyard Homestead, and then there's the one that's Raising Farm Animals. And they're both interesting books, right? Like, if you want to get into little bits of having a, you know, like a permaculture type homestead, this is these two books, or this one and then the other one that's like it, is, you know, a great reference to read through. And kind of, I think books like this really help you figure out if you really want to do it or not, want to spend the time and the investment. And then there's Barnyard in Your Backyard, which is also a good, you know, all of these kind of pertain. Those first three pertain to small scale. Grass-fed cattle is an interesting one. It's more geared towards like a farmer, a big farmer that's going to be doing it for a living. But they do, there's a lot of great information in there about pasturing. And this book I really love because I think it's after the end of every chapter, they interview and talk about a different farmer and about their farm and what they've done. And I found it's kind of geared from a more natural standpoint. So all of the farmers are stepping away from your traditional big, normal, big ag and moving to more of a sustainable. So it's interesting. Some of them they're in the process of transitioning. Some of them already have. And so that was really interesting part of that book, not just the information in it. But I remember one of the farms they featured was a raw-fed dairy down in Florida. Mm. And then when we went to Florida last spring, I looked them up and we got milk from them when we went down there.
That's great.
I think I have my Google Maps, because I have a Google Maps where I put anything I find on the internet, like a farm or anywhere I'd love to visit someday. If I'm searching around, I put it on this Google Map, and it's called Places I Want to Go. And so whenever we go anywhere, I pop open this Google Map and I'll be like, oh, there's a water buffalo farm that sells yogurt on the way. Let's stop there.
That's great.
So I think I looked up a lot of these farms and put them in my Google Maps. But yeah, that book is great, and it'll definitely give you a great in-depth view of grass, pasture-based kind of... Well, you definitely need to do a lot of research before you bring home a cow, I think.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's a whole different, any of this,
it's
doing...
a whole different ball game than like a cat.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yes, yes.
In doing anything as far as getting livestock of any sort, chickens or anything, you want to do your research because going into it, that'll pay dividends on the back end once you have that. Mm-hmm. But also, you know, you want to know the commitment you're making, because if you get into it and it takes all this time and money and energy and doesn't pay anything out, you know, you don't get anything out of it, then you've just kind of wasted that, you know.
Right.
And so sometimes it's good. And I know that's where Susie and I balance each other out, because Susie's very much the sort
of... Oh, I almost got pigs last fall.
Yeah, jump in with both feet, you know, and I'm going, hang on a second here. Yeah. Let's think about this a minute and what it's going to take to...
Yeah.
And that's the reason that our ducks still don't have a house and they're living in the garage.
Yeah. Which they love, by the way.
Which they do love, and they're becoming
welfare
ducks.
Our wild ducks that people told us we'd never get them to go inside.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you can't get them to go outside.
Yeah.
Our neighbor came up the other day and they were standing about 3 feet away from the door, and he's like, hey, look at that. Wow, they're outside. Yeah, that's amazing.
Of course, it's winter, but...
Yeah, that's true. But, that's a good list, and so hopefully people will take a look at
and
some of those.
And definitely, if you're going to get a family cow, go meet a couple of your small...
Yeah, absolutely. Books are good, but there's nothing like talking to somebody, and, you know, and me, I want to know, like, the nitty gritty. I want to know the details. How exactly do you remember to shake the milk every hour? So I have timers going off all over, and there's times where I forget, and, but I mean, I want to know, you know, how do you roll your butter? How do you freeze this? What do you do? And a lot of times that's all I need is that seed planted, and then I can tweak it and take it from there. But sometimes you don't even know where to start.
Mm-hmm. And it's great to develop I see a cow out there right now. And it's definitely good to develop that relationship, because then you can have kind of a mentor. And I'm sure, you guys are more than happy to mentor other people, even though they're getting a cow and essentially like, you know, they're not going to be buying milk from you because you guys, you're not in it for the money.
Yeah.
You know, you're in it for good food and for relationships and community, and because you enjoy it. And, you know, you want other people to be able to experience.
Well, and this past year, this will be our third year. We had a family actually that bought like one of our cows. They bought the cow, but we have it here and we milk it for them. Mm-hmm. And they have 11 in their family. So they come every other day and they get all of the milk from their cow. And one of the most fun things for me has been teaching her, this is how you can do cottage cheese. And this is how you can do butter. And this is how, you know, and I love it. It's great. And because we can't be someone else's farmer, I guess, for all of the nitty gritties, but we can teach you how to do it with your milk, you know, and if more people can learn that and learn that self-sufficiency, community self, you know, that's a huge motivation for us to teach people that. Oh, yeah.
And maybe you can even, if you want to learn a little bit more from a farmer, maybe you could even barter your time with them and say, hey, I'll come and help you out.
Oh, absolutely.
For a month. And,
give me some cheese or something.
Yeah.
Sure. Because that would be a good way to get experience plus.
And figure out if you really want to do it, you know.
To see the ins and the outs of it. And, do you want to make that commitment?
Or go ask to milk one of their cows
by hand.
By hand and see what you really want to do.
Cow be like, what are you doing? Get away from me. Well, that's great. And I just want to thank you for taking the time to sit down with us and to chat with us.
Sure.
Because I think it'll be hugely beneficial and if anything, interesting to people who aren't interested in getting a cow for themselves, but just to find out a little bit more about that. And so just to wrap things up, I want to say thank you again for supporting the podcast and the blog. And if you want to support the podcast or the blog, you can head to cultivatesimple.com or to geotrend.com and look in the sidebar there. There's our support links where you can do sign up for a monthly donation, anywhere from $5 all the way up. Or I set one up for $50 a year. I thought that would be an easy way if somebody wanted to make a one-time $50 a year payment. And the way that subscription works is that you set it up and every month it just takes that money from your PayPal account or whatever account you set up there. Or you can make a one-time donation. We've had a lot of people take advantage of that, and we do have some notes that we're going to be reading in
maybe
one of the future shows.
Since we're traveling right now.
And that's...
Didn't quite plan that out for this.
It's been a little bit busy. Our schedule for today has been crazy, and it's still only about halfway over. And the guy at the oil changing station messed it up, because usually I change my own oil, you know, to save the money on it, and because I like getting underneath the car. And we pulled in today, and he's like, oh, back in an hour. Oh, thanks. So we've got a few other things we need to do, and then we're catching a flight tomorrow, which we'll be talking about a little bit, I'm sure, in a future show. But also wanted to mention not only the support and thanking people for supporting us and asking for more support, but also to leave a comment or a review in iTunes, because that's very helpful for people to
and
find
how
us.
Do you do that, Brian?
If you go to... that is a great question.
We need Dawn in the background on all of our podcasts. Yeah.
She just have her on the phone with one of the earpieces in my ear that she can just ask questions. If you go...
She's like that guy on David Letterman that's over on the side of the microphone.
She's our Ed McMahon. Hi-oh!
Mike would be red in the face right now if he was here.
So if you go to Chiatren to the blog or to Cultivate Simple, in the on the left-hand side, there is a link to the iTunes page. If you click on that, it'll take you into iTunes, and there's a place down there, once you're logged in through iTunes, to leave a review, and a 5-star review at that, because I know that you will be leaving a 5-star review. Or we've got this new thing. Is it Stitcher? It's Stitcher.
Stitcher.
Yeah, you said Skitcher earlier.
Stitcher. Because we have that Skitch program.
No, it's Stitcher Radio, which is kind of like a radio station that you program yourself. I don't know how it works, but you can leave us a review there too.
It's like Pandora, but you put podcasts in.
Right. Yeah, that's what
And the ones that you like. Yeah. So it plays all the stuff you like.
And if that's not what it is, that would be a great idea, Susie.
I know, maybe
we should think of a domain
name.
Free time
to do anything to do it.
So that's, is there anything else you want to mention?
I don't think so.
Why don't you send us out with one of your neat little phrases?
Great, now you put me on the spot.
Cultivate Simple.
I'd rather be a farmer. I'd rather work the land. I'd rather see the mountainsides. I'd rather see your hand. I'd rather swim the ocean. I'd rather not pretend. I'd rather do some thinking now. Somehow it all depends. If I could fly away, See my hometown. I'd rather hold my wife. I'd rather never question things. That's the story of my life. I'd rather not be crying. I'd rather just be whole. I'd rather brave the cleansing fire. I'd rather feed my soul. If I could fly away from me, to ride this wind above the tree. Open to suggestions. I'm crying out to you. I'm ready to be finished here. I'm ready for this season to be if I could fly away from me, to ride.